This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by MM Comfort Systems. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
So right now, the Supreme Court, when you look at it as conservative justices versus liberal justices, is 6 conservatives, 3 liberals, 9 total. The reason why we're at that point is sheer coincidence, right? You've got a party in power that names the justices, and then you've got the party in power approving the justices. Sometimes there is a conflict in the party in power who names and the party in power that approves. Sometimes a party in power appoints someone who's a conservative who turns out to be a little bit more liberal than they thought, and vice versa. The system that we have in place ensures that sometimes it's conservatives, sometimes it's liberals in power, sometimes it's a mixed bag and we're not entirely sure. Oftentimes it's made up of jurists who will surprise you on a lot of the cases. But Democrats are trying to pull a hostile takeover of the Supreme Court. They're not hiding it. They don't hide their radical agenda. They want 13 justices now. And they have introduced that plan for 13 justices because it would add 4 more liberals to the court, which then would give Democrats a 7-6 advantage over conservatives and ensure essentially that all of their policies always win out. That anytime they have an issue that gets in front of the court, they end up winning. That is what they want to have happen. It is a shockingly naked power grab. This is an abuse that is so remarkably damaging that even by introducing it as an idea, it has the potential to destroy the justice system, our constitutional system as we know it, because what they're effectively saying is that if they do not get their way, they will create a system in which they always win. They are not about fairness or justice. That is not what they're about. None of this should shock you. None of this should shock you. Some of the same people who back Antifa violence or pretend they don't exist, they're the ones who are behind this. The people in the street right now who have been rioting, what do they say? What do they demand? They demand justice as they see it. Not justice, but justice as they see it. They chant, no justice, no peace, over and over and over again. What does that mean? It's not just a slogan, right? It is not just a slogan. If you don't find someone guilty, regardless of the evidence, they will turn violent. That, of course, is not justice. That is mob rule. And that is the message that they send when they go out into the streets and they destroy cities, hurt people, try to hurt people, sometimes murder people. And though our Supreme Court is not broken by any stretch of the imagination, in fact, of our branches of government, it has by far the highest popularity. By far the highest popularity. Senator Ed Markey, the Democrat from Massachusetts, he was out there introducing this alongside his colleagues. He thinks it's broken.
And we do it by adding 4 seats to the court to create a 13-member Supreme Court. These 4 new seats to be filled by President Biden will reconstitute the United States Supreme Court. The bench will then rightly reflect the values of the majority of the American people on whose behalf they serve. Expanding the court is constitutional. Congress has done it before, and Congress must do it again.
So the court has to reflect the liberal perspective, is what he's saying. And his logic is because, well, Biden's in power. Democrats are in power. That means the people support the Democratic Party. So when Trump was in office, I'm assuming Senator Markey thought Trump should have added 4 extra justices. Or is that what we're doing here? Is that what we're doing here? Or do you think that if Donald Trump even joked about that, we would have endless conversations on CNN and MSNBC and op-eds in the New York Times and the Washington Post about how the president is trying to become king and install a monarchy, or becoming a tyrant and an authoritarian. I could have written the script. But because the Democrats are doing it, all of a sudden, oh, well, you know, it's a worthy cause. It's not fair that the court is run by conservatives. We're not conservatives in the media. We're liberals, so we're going to fight this. You have Congressman Mondaire Jones, the Democrat from New York, that no one has ever heard of, and is going to use this to try to increase his progressive bona fides. He thinks a conservative majority in the Supreme Court is somehow a threat to democracy.
I wish we did not have to stand here today.
You actually don't have to stand there today. You made the choice to stand there today. You didn't have to do anything at all. You could have acknowledged that this is our system of government, the same way that we understand that sometimes we get presidents in office that we don't like. In fact, we have one right now that we do not like. And yet we deal with it because we understand that we have a great system in place where sometimes we're going to win, sometimes we're going to lose. Sometimes we're going to be very passionate in our anger when we lose. Sometimes we'll accept the loss and say, okay, it could have been worse. Sometimes we're very proud of our win. Sometimes we're like, okay, we won, but, you know, I wish it was with a somewhat better candidate. Both sides experience that throughout their lifetimes. You're choosing to do this. You're choosing to break apart this nation.
I wish we didn't have a far-right Supreme Court majority that is hostile to democracy itself.
Oh, they're hostile to democracy itself with all of those, what, rulings that haven't hit at democracy at all. In fact, we haven't had a court all that long with its newest member, Amy Coney Barrett. I didn't hear a whole lot of specific cases that were cited from this specific court. Our democracy is in trouble. Oh, okay.
But here we are.
Here we are.
And the fact is, if we want to save our democracy, we must act before it is too late by restoring balance to the Supreme Court.
Restoring balance to the Supreme Court. What do people mean when they say balance? What do people mean?
Means that they, no, of course not.
Because that's what I thought balance meant.
Well, it's 2021. Why would you think that balance means equal?
Balance would normally mean equal, though, right? In a normal world?
Yes, in a world that makes sense, yes.
But adding four liberal justices would give them one extra liberal justice, right?
Correct.
That's not balance, is it?
No, not at all.
They're not fighting for democracy. They're fighting to install tyranny. But they're pretending that this is all about fighting for democracy by tearing our democratic systems apart. What do they say on the left about our institutions? What are our institutions founded in?
Racism.
Yep. White supremacy. What must you do to these institutions to get rid of the racism and white supremacy?
Abolish them.
Tear them down. Dismantle them. And do what? Rebuild in the image that they would prefer them to be rebuilt. That is what they're trying to do to the Supreme Court. And anyone who allows them to get away with this or even entertains this as an idea is part of the problem that is truly facing this democracy. It's something that Senator Tom Cotton understands, and he talked about this morning on Fox News.
But if the Democrats simply want to expand the court to add four new liberal justices because that's the current deficit they would need to make up to get Democratic appointed justices in control of the committee, the court will lose all legitimacy. That's what Justice Stephen Breyer said just a couple weeks ago. That's what the late, great Justice Ginsburg said a few years ago. Even Joe Biden has taken this position repeatedly in the past. So President Biden and every single Democrat needs to be asked and must answer whether they support this radical proposal that would fundamentally alter the structure of American law and life.
That is well stated. That is well stated. I don't think people truly understand what is on the line here. if this were even to be seriously entertained by more than the small group of lunatics who unveiled this proposal today, and that not every single Democrat, including Patty Murray or Maria Cantwell, have come out and condemned it outright, should terrify you. Should absolutely terrify you. Where are you, senators? Why haven't our senators said anything? I haven't seen anything yet. Tiffany Smiley has something to say, by the way. She is the Republican who just announced that she's running against Patty Murray for Senate here in Washington. She's going to be joining the show at about 5:30. Unreal. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants, twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So today, everyone over the age of 16 here in Washington State is eligible for a vaccine, though supply will still be an issue. Kind of depends on where you are. Today, some people said it wasn't all that hard to find. Others said, wow, I just could not find a vaccine for the life of me. Now, I suppose if I was willing to take a really long drive and go from Puyallup to Yakima, maybe if I was able to, or willing, I should say, to drive from Shoreline to Kelso, maybe I'd be able to find one. But I'm not down. But some folks were able to find it.
I started looking around multiple websites, I mean, pharmacies, mass vaccination sites, and just tried to get myself on any notification list I could.
She got one in North Seattle, as did this dude talking to Cairo 7 TV.
It gave me a chance to be able to run our business a little bit better with more of our employees coming in.
Because he's protected. So that's good for him. For him and so many others, it means their lives can get back to normal. But the fact of the matter is, despite it being open for everybody, and maybe because it's being open for everybody, vaccine availability is not going to be as easy as some people think. Here's Assistant Health Secretary Michelle Roberts.
It all continues to boil down to vaccine supply. And our state allocations have unfortunately gone down recently.
Gone down recently, just in time. Just in time for the announcement that everyone can go ahead and get one now. We also got word today from the CEO of Pfizer. His name is Albert Bourla. He was speaking at a CNBC-sponsored event that you will need almost certainly or maybe likely a booster shot.
If you're asking me, I think that there will be a need based on this data for revaccinations. We need to see what would be the sequence and for how often we need to do that. That remains to be seen. A likely scenario is that there will be likely a need for a third dose somewhere between 6 and 12 months. And then from there, there will be an annual revaccination. But all of that needs to be confirmed. And again, the variants will play a key role.
So there were some folks who seemed shocked by this, at least as judging by stupid people on Twitter. Is this new? I thought everyone was pretty much saying you would almost certainly need a booster shot, mostly because of the variants that are out there and starting to take a bigger role in the spread of COVID. And then I remember us, even before Pfizer or Moderna or any of them even came out, we were talking about most likely being like a flu vaccine where you're just offered it every single year.
I think that was like a... That was kind of like an idea, but now that it's been said by one of the...
I thought it was said before.
I never heard this said by anybody. Okay. I just thought it was kind of speculated on.
Okay, fair enough. I thought it was kind of assumed. But people are like, oh, this is a huge deal. Oh my gosh, we told we're not to trust. Like, no, but slow down. I'm certain we talked about this.
I mean, it makes a decent amount of sense. Like, it's not like it's something that's just, like, completely unnecessary.
Yeah, look, COVID's never going to go away. COVID's not going to go away. It's going to be like the flu, right? It's going to be like the common cold. And it will become less intense because of the natural way our bodies adapt to viruses like this. The flu still kills, but obviously the flu is nowhere near as dangerous as it once was to the average person. And the same thing will happen with COVID. but it's always going to be there. And so you're going to have to put up with it to a certain degree. And at some point, less and less people will get the vaccine, like less and less people get the flu vaccine. And our bodies will have maybe more of a natural immunity to the severity of it. And we'll go about our merry way. And then we'll look back at this and say, remember the time when Inslee almost destroyed us all? And we'll laugh and then cry and then laugh and then cry, mostly as Mannix.
Plus, it would be ridiculous to think that we wouldn't need, like, annual boosters. I mean, our microchips need to be updated anyways, so
yeah, that's the new iOS.
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously. It's a programming thing.
So we also found out on the vaccine front today, J&J, a seventh case has been tied to the concerns over blood clotting. So it's seven cases that we know of. Most people seem to acknowledge that that's of what we know, meaning there's probably more than seven out there. We heard from some doctors who believe that this is not just going to be an issue that's tied to J&J. It's going to be tied to the other vaccines, not because they're unsafe for the vast majority of people out there, but there's the speculation that it could be tied directly to people who got the vaccine after having already had COVID, and that there might be some kind of correlation there. We don't know. We just know at this point it's all women who are the victims of this severe side effect. And, you know, it does need more studying. And the CDC is taking some flack at this point for not voting either way on J&J and taking more time. They've put themselves in a difficult position, right? They could, at the end of this, say, oh, no, never mind. We looked at the data. Thumbs up. They've done enough damage. No one, I feel like, will be comfortable taking J&J unless they give us some specific guidance. Now, if they come out and say, no, J&J is safe. However, if you are a woman between 18 and 49 and you've already had COVID, or, you know, I'm making this part up, you should get one of the other vaccines. People are going to question the other vaccine safety. Well, what don't you know about those vaccines? Because you didn't know this about J&J, even if the number is very, very low. Because with seven, it's almost literally one in a million who would get this blood clot. Again, I know that that's a low number. So they kind of put themselves in a difficult spot. But at the same time, what else are they supposed to do?
Yeah, it's a pandemic. It's full of difficult spots.
I don't necessarily blame them per se. Unless they look at the data and they literally come out and say, yeah, no, it's all good. Sorry. But we didn't need to do this. Then I'm going to wonder whether or not they were doing this out of too much of an abundance of caution, because then they just unnecessarily freak people out. We'll see. I do know that some folks are struggling to get their vaccines. In fact, over at Lumen Field, where there's this mass vaccination site, a bunch of people had their appointments canceled for tomorrow. And it just so happened that a bunch of them worked at Cairo 7 TV, like Eddie, who is an employee there who had his shot canceled. And he was bummed.
I was definitely excited to finally get it. And then just kind of got slapped in the face and say, hey, literally, no, there's, you know, you have to wait again.
Yeah, they sent over an employee from the city of Seattle. They slapped him and said, you're canceled, dude.
I love that then. We need to do more of that.
Yeah. Folks like Alicia, also a worker at Cairo 7, was wondering whether or not the cancellation was because of the J&J vaccine pause.
I just assumed they were going to, you know, move all of our first doses to the people who were scheduled for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Now, initially, they got no explanation, but it turns out it had nothing to do with J&J. It had everything to do with the fact that they found their links on a website that wasn't from the government. And it included, it's called like a link hunter, like a COVID vaccine link hunter, where they just go out and try to find as many links for appointments as possible. And the link that they took was not meant for the general public. It was meant for volunteers and whatnot, the people who were part of the prioritization before it was open to everyone. And that's why.
Oh, good.
So I looked at them like Cairo 7 is not going, these employees are not going through the official channels. It's not illegal. But the website that did this was all like, yeah, they told us not to do it and we didn't do it again. We didn't mean to do it.
Did she also get slapped like Eddie?
You know, she didn't say it. And that shows inequities.
That's a not... That's,
everyone should get slapped, or no one.
That's not a good outreach program if it's
like it.
You know, not equal across the board.
I'm with you. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be on Fox Business tomorrow morning, about 7:15, with Stuart Varney, talking about my story yesterday. We told you a little bit about, we'll dive into it a little bit later on, maybe this afternoon, a BLM activist who happens to be black is behind a suspected, an alleged hate crime, which obviously flies in the face of this idea that it's white supremacists behind the hate crime surge. We do not actually have a surge of hate crimes the way that people are claiming. So I'll be talking about that with him tomorrow morning on Fox Business. Last night was the fourth night of riots in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. Tonight will be the fifth night. Tomorrow, the sixth night, and so on and so forth, because rioters are told that their actions are justified, that what they're doing is justified, that their anger is real. And so their actions are okay. They're attacking cops. They're attacking media members. Not really hearing a whole lot of condemnation from the media on that. Certainly not from CNN and one of their own camera people getting hit in the head with a water bottle. Knocked out almost. Knocked to the ground. 24 people arrested last night. There's a 10 p.m. curfew in place. It's not being followed. Bricks are getting thrown, rocks, milk jugs, fireworks are being shot at officers and at buildings, laser pointers being pointed at law enforcement officers. Folks tried to climb and dismantle the fence that surrounds the police precinct.
Yeah. Well, I've been here all four nights. I'm just standing here today with soup for my family. And we're just, you know, watching all of this unfold. It's very unfortunate.
You're not planning on using that, are you? Throwing it at the police?
Like I said, it's for my family.
Literally for your family.
Yeah. All right.
It's weird. He's got a can of soup for his family. One can.
One can, whole family.
Okay. He was, but he told Sarah Seidner from CNN, definitely not going to use that to hurt an officer.
Bingo.
Okay. I'm glad I can appreciate his honesty, because too often these protesters who are totally peaceful, never at all violent, they sometimes they lie about their intent, but we found a good one.
Yeah, of course he's good. He's taking care of his family.
Who among us hasn't gone to a violent protest with dinner?
I mean, you got
for the family.
You got to provide it.
Form of a can. You can look at it. It was probably like creamed tomatoes.
That's the best one you
with pickles.
Ew.
That's the stuff that you have that you usually give to charity.
This is a weird way to give it to charity.
That's what everyone does. Whenever there's any sort of canned food drive, you go into the pantry, you pull the stuff that you'll never eat.
I figured it was one of those like beef and beans ones or whatever they are.
Ugh. Derek Chauvin trial will wrap early next week. The prosecution rested their case yesterday. Chauvin's side, the defense, did the same today. Derek Chauvin announced that he would not, in fact, be testifying. So the defense rested. We know what's going to happen, which is if Derek Chauvin doesn't get the fullest punishment available, get found guilty on all of the counts, there's going to be rioting. I would argue if he's found guilty on one of the counts, there will be rioting. And if he's found guilty on all of them, still rioting. There's going to be rioting. Because we have created a system in which we say, go ahead and riot if you'd like. But obviously, if we have a mistrial, which is obviously a possibility, there's going to be, wait for it, rioting. You have voices out there on cable TV, on CNN, on MSNBC, who are actively telling people that that kind of anger is justified. Here's David Henderson, a former prosecutor. They say if they convict just on manslaughter, well, it'd be a slap in the face to this community. That's egging them on.
For me, the more I watch it, the more it hurts to see the way they treated him, to see how fearful he was of being killed by police. And for anyone who thinks that's unreasonable, tell that to Philando Castile. Because when Eugene listed off the cases that caused him to have doubt, remember, there have been three killings, wrongful killings of black people in the Minneapolis area in the past 5 years. Philando Castile, George Floyd, now Dante Wright. And so I think what this video probably truly does is further cement what people are already feeling. For those of us who are sympathetic and who appreciate what's going on, it hurts. But for people who are resistant, who want to defend police, I think it has the opposite effect. And that goes towards them trying to seek a hung jury. A hung jury, there's still hope. You can retry Derek Chauvin, but if they convict on manslaughter, that will be a slap in the face for this community because the punishment simply will not fit the crime.
They're purposefully riling up the mob. The mob is already saying no justice, no peace, and they only view justice as a guilty verdict across the board. Well, let's talk a little bit about what that means, the idea of justice. You know who Derek Chauvin is. You know who Officer Potter is. You know the names of officers who get accused of these crimes. Yesterday, federal prosecutors said they wouldn't be filing charges against the U.S. Capitol police officer who shot and killed Ashley Babbitt during the Capitol riot on January 6th. But we don't know who the officer is. We have no clue whatsoever. That's bizarre. That's bizarre. I'm as pro-cop as they come, and I'm wondering why we don't have some basic answers here. I actually defend the officer in that case, but I'm wondering how folks on the left can say the system is broken, it's against African-Americans in particular, but also look at the case with Ashley Babbitt, who was unarmed. She was clearly breaking the law, and I understand why an officer would fire. There was a mob trying to break into that room, into the chambers. But we don't get details on that, but we get all the details from all these other cases. Huh. 1-800-465-877. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Senator Mike Patton's measure to help protect citizens and whistleblowers and members of the press from frivolous lawsuits will become law. It's a huge bit of news for the fight for free speech. Now, at the same time, there's also some movement on some very important other bills, one that could impact policing in the state of Washington as it relates to tear gas. Joining me on the line to discuss it all is Senator Patton, who represents Spokane Valley. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you again, Jason.
So let's talk first about your bill that essentially reinstates these anti-SLAPP protections, SLAPP standing for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. Now, without getting too in the weeds, because I think it could confuse a lot of people, what happened that made it necessary for you to even have to introduce this bill?
Well, the state Supreme Court in a case called Davis v. Cox ruled our previous anti-SLAPP law unconstitutional, and that was about 4 years ago, and we've been trying ever since to get something through. This year, we had the benefit of the Uniform Law Commission suggesting a uniform bill. That was the starter. And then it's made its way through the legislative process and just yesterday was sent off to the governor. So it's been approved by the House and then it's up to the governor. Hopefully he will sign it.
So what is an anti-SLAPP law?
Well, it's basically a way to get into court quickly when a lawsuit has been filed against you to basically harass you for exercising your free speech rights. So it's a benefit to activists from the right or the left. The case originally down in Olympia dealt with the Olympia co-ops that were boycotting Israeli goods on behalf of the Palestinians. So you don't know what the issue is going to be, but I think it's also been used. I think Tim Iman might have even invoked it at one point. So it's a way to get into court quickly, get these so-called frivolous lawsuits aimed to impinge on your free speech rights, get them thrown out of court and get reasonable attorney's fees and costs for doing so.
Yeah, and so your point is that, and the reason you mentioned activists is, let's say an activist or really a whistleblower says something against a company. They point out some sort of wrongdoing. Well, a corporation can then sue in a frivolous way, essentially to stop that person from speaking out. And really the intent is to stop someone from speaking out. It has nothing to do with the law, but they understand that they're a corporation that has a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of power going up against an individual who can't really afford it. This anti-SLAPP protection effectively says, yeah, no, you don't get to do that. And if you do, you will pay a price.
Right. It could be a corporation, could be very
anyone.
Wealthy individuals that are on the other side of the issue.
Exactly. So this is good across the board. It protects anyone on the basis of free speech, which means it's going to help both the right, the left, down the middle, or people who don't know where they stand politically.
Right. That's the way I see it. And I did have some allies that usually are not with me on issues in Olympia, like the Newspaper Association and the Movie Theater Group, but that's great. You know, I think it really should help everybody who's mm-hmm. interested in free speech and not being yep. Harassed by somebody that has more resources to just try to shut you up.
Exactly. State Senator Mike Patton joining me on the line, a Republican from Spokane Valley. Let's talk about the police tactics bill, the use of force bills that will get to the governor's desk. Are you expecting an allowable use of tear gas? Where do things stand at this point?
Well, right now, we got an amendment on the bill that allows for tear gas to be used. Previous legislation had limited the tear gas only to be used in prisons, or detention centers. So this would amendment would allow it if there was a riot. And we had an extremely impassioned speech by Senator Hobbs, a Democrat who represents mm-hmm. The Lake Stevens area, who is a officer in the National Guard, and where he had to use it. And he said without the tear gas, there would have been rubber bullets or something worse, and somebody could have been killed or injured. Whereas the tear gas, you might have some irritation and watery eyes and maybe an upset stomach, but you're going to survive. And this would have eliminated it, and it was being pushed, or that position was being pushed by Senator Peterson, who lives and represents the area on Capitol Hill. I think he got some tear gas from the riots last summer in Seattle, so which was right near where mm-hmm. he lives. So,
well, God forbid he actually call out the rioters. Instead, he calls out the police.
Well, yeah. Then they talked about it being an instrument of war. But, years and years ago, had basic training. I was in the Army Reserves, and we had to go through that. And, yeah, it's irritable and all that, but it's nothing that the military folks go through training on an annual basis for it. So, you'd like to avoid it, but you got to consider the alternatives. And to me, this was a public safety issue. We don't want rubber bullets can kill. And that somebody suggested water cannons. Well, you think Bull Connor and mm-hmm. Selma when you think of water cannon. So I mean, this is a much better, and this was kind of the theme throughout. I mean, they rejected, I tried to have some authorization for lateral neck restraints, not chokeholds, but lateral neck restraints, which are much safer. The evidence is overwhelming, much safer than a stun gun or a baton or some other more deadly force that would be used. So I think it's going to be counterproductive, some of the things they want, and we'll see how all this ends out. But it's been a really rough session for the peace officers and the good people in law enforcement.
So the only other issue, and it is related to law enforcement in a way, what is happening with the DUI look-back bill of yours? Look-back meaning how many years one can go back to look at a prior DUI to calculate whether it's enough to be a felony. Right now, it's 4 DUIs in 10 years would lead to a felony, and you're trying to extend it.
Yeah, to 15 years, which is a modest extension. It's passed the Senate a number of times and has been held up in the House. This year, Representative Ormsby from Spokane did not give it a hearing in the House Appropriations. It passed out of the House Public Safety Committee on a 10-3 vote. So we've had problems over there. Technically, if the legislature still wanted to deal with it, they could, because there is some money appropriated in the budget. So it is, could be argued it's necessary to implement the budget. But right now, it looks like it's not going to be acted upon. And again, the House killed the bill. And at a time when we've got, you know, these DUIs increasing, and the people that are the repeat offenders are the ones most likely to have a vehicular homicide or vehicular assault. That's what we're trying to prevent, and the evidence is overwhelming. And while we've had a decrease in alcohol-only DUIs or impaired driving, the drug-related and combination alcohol-drug impaired drivings are on the increase. So even though traffic is down because of the pandemic, the number of DUIs has been on the uptick. So it's very important legislation. Amy Freeheim, the King County prosecutor who prosecutes these, gave some very impassioned testimony. This is one of the most dangerous crimes that can be committed. I mean, nobody knows. You could be out driving the woman down in Puyallup. Mom and two kids were killed by this guy going 100 miles an hour, allegedly high on drugs. You know, just horrible stuff that's preventable. So I will keep pushing on it, but it's frustrating.
So it sounds like you're saying not good news for DUI, but good news on the tear gas front.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And hopefully that'll hold. I mean, the bill's still in dispute, but hopefully it'll hold.
Well, hopefully it will, because it's ridiculous what Democrats right now are doing on the policing side in particular. So, but at least you got the anti-slap bill passed. We'll see, though, whether or not the Supreme Court likes this one. Hopefully they will. We've been talking with State Senator Mike Patton. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Jason. Thank you. Bye now.
Absolutely. You are listening to The Jason Rants Show.